Yes, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Titus O'Reilly here, and we have some exciting news for 2024. Mick and I are going to be performing two live sports bazaars at the Corner Hotel in Richmond, 20th and 27th of February. We're really looking forward to this. It's right near Mick's house, so we're guaranteed to be able to do it. We'd love you to come along. Tickets are available through OzTix. You can either go to OzTix and search Sports Bazaar or put the link in the show notes. And for those of you in other states, we are looking at doing that too. So don't feel left out. We're just starting here because, well, it's almost next door to Mick's house, so why wouldn't you? Sports Bazaar podcast live, the Corner Hotel, the 20th and the 27th of February. Hope to see you there.
It's Sports Bazaar.
This is where the trouble starts.
It's like a party switch is flicked off.
We're not here for a haircut.
The hunt for the weirdest.
You're blowing my mind. I can't keep it. You fact check this.
There is no logic to any of what's going to happen.
Strangest.
Wow. This is outrageous.
It's not for the ages.
Things are just going to get sillier and sillier.
No red flags there.
Most unbelievable.
Volatile.
Erratic.
Simple.
And clinically insane.
Stories to ever occur.
There's a lot of our stories that start with someone
fleeing money lenders.
This is not the perfect preparation.
In the world of sport.
This is the opposite of perfect preparation. This is the worst.
Sports Bazaar.
Yeah, were you saying horsewhipped as in he was actually horsewhipped?
Yeah, he said there's only one thing for it. I ordered hair of the dog.
A rabble of vagrants, drunkards, ruffian brawlers and gambling desperados.
So like the Sports Bazaar audience. Yeah.
This is the Sports Bazaar Summer Edition.
Did I miss that meeting?
You miss a lot of meetings.
With Titus O'Reilly.
Yes, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Sports Bazaar. Titus O'Reilly. We're back again with the best of, and I was trying to think what to cover this time because we've done people with way too much money, which I absolutely loved. But we also had, of course, very early on, we had people that are unlucky in love. So we've covered money, we've covered love, the main things in life. So for this one, I thought, why don't we just go for all that general mayhem? What are the funniest, silliest stories we have that have just created absolute chaos? And when it comes to mayhem, snooker legend Jimmy White's entire life was a masterclass. It was just one thing after another. But really, nothing peaked at more than when he teamed up with fellow snooker madman Alex Higgins. And then we get what I'd call is complete mayhem. Jimmy's like 19 when he starts hanging around with Alex Higgins, and because they're both playing professional. Higgins is the world champion. So the professional world champion, Jimmy's the amateur world champion, but now it's turned professional.
Yeah.
They're hanging around doing stuff and they get along like a house on fire because they both just love the pub, the drink and whatever, right? So you can imagine.
Brilliant.
So once they decide to go on a tour together, because you can make a lot of money
just
playing
the two
exhibitions.
Of them.
Yeah. You can make a lot of money doing
Keith
this.
Moon's like, not there.
So, Keith Moon's, I think, I'm really Keith hoping Moon's Keith not Moon with Moon us anymore. Was, no, he's, I think he's. So Higgins is the world champion. Promo says, bring the world champion trophy with you. And people at pubs will love to see it and pose with it and all that. So it goes, all right. And then they'd show up at a pub or a snooker hall, Alex Higgins, Jimmy White playing each other, and then you get to see the trophy and everything. So punters love it, huge tour. So they're touring, they're driving around in, they've got sort of a tour bus. And the final night, or one of the final nights, the promoter does a runner with all the money.
Unbelievable. It's dodgy, dodgy Bob stuff.
Dodgy Bob was at least did what he said. There's an Irish guy who's driven them around in the tour van who's been paid by the promoter to drive them around, and he suddenly realised he's not getting paid because the promoter's done a runner either. So Alex bangs on the door of the tour van and says, can I get the trophy back? And this guy goes, no way. You guys have to pay me then. The promoter's run off. I've driven you guys for weeks.
He's holding hostage.
I'm holding hostage the world championship trophy. So Higgins is banging on the door. They're in the parking lot of a pub, funnily enough. And Higgins is banging on the door saying, open this door now. I want my trophy. And the driver's saying, oh, you'll get your trophy when I get paid for this tour. Higgins starts getting redder and redder, going, open up this instant. And he says, I'll have you shot. And screaming and carry on. Eventually news gets to the local police force that Alex Higgins, the world snooker champion, who is famous at this point, you got to remember.
Yes.
On the BBC every week, you know.
Absolutely.
On front of papers. Is having a meltdown in the pub.
Threatening to kill an Irishman.
Threatening to kill someone. A police officer shows up and the constable straight away reckons Higgins and says, calm down, man, what's wrong? And he explains it. So he turns to the Irish driver and goes, open this door in the name of the law. I demand you give Mr. Higgins his trophy back.
And the driver just pretends he can't hear, right? So even the cops can't budge him. Jimmy decides there's one thing for this. He says to Higgins, let's go in the bar and have a drink.
Perfect.
So they can see out the window the bus. So it's a standoff. The driver's in the bus. Higgins.
They'll know if he leaves.
Higgins and White are watching and the policeman's trying to is
standing
there.
It's just like a stakeout.
Yeah, and while the policeman tries to negotiate with the driver. So they're just watching out the window. Eventually, the police officer comes in and goes, a small drink is needed, I think. So the police officer sits down and has a drink with them. So they're watching this bus. This Irish guy's not getting out. They're all having a drink. He says, before long, one pipe became two. And the fence, so him and the policeman, all three of them are drinking heavily. Plastered. The police officer says, I'll call my sergeant down. Maybe that'll help. So they call his sergeant down. He joins to see it, tries with the driver. The driver's not interested. So the sergeant sits down and has a drink.
There's only
them.
One thing for it.
So suddenly there's two coppers and these guys drinking. Next thing, the chief constable of the whole area shows up and he comes in and has a drink.
It's only one sensible option.
So he starts calling all the police cars in the area to come and arrive with their lights on to try and scare the driver. Yeah. So there's suddenly this car park's full of police officers with lights and sirens.
But these guys are having a drink.
But they all keep coming in and drinking with them, right? So it's half the police force drinking with the world champion going, this is great, watching these Irishmen not get out who won't bug. Eventually, Higgins is going nuts, so they're plying him with Guinness after Guinness. Right. Finally, the local priest comes down fresh from Sunday Mass and says, he will listen to me. I'm a man of the cloth. And he's
in the
an
name
Irish,
of the Lord.
He's an Irishman. He says, but before I go talk to him, I think a drop of Guinness is needed to keep my voice nice and strong. So there they are, the chief constable, the World Snooker Championship, several police, a priest, all just standing there watching this Irishman. Like, suddenly the press show up. The national media get word of
this. Well, they hate a drink.
And they all show up. And so they say, Alex Higgins, can we have a quick word? Because he's the world championship. And Higgins is, like, not happy. So he gets on television and he says, ladies and gentlemen, in 1966, a dog found the World Cup trophy. That's that famous story of the Football World Cup went missing and a dog found it. And this is him saying this to police. In 1982, a dog has nicked the World Championship trophy. The caravan owner, watching all this, decides that he'll send a message that he can stay in there a long time by starting to fry some bacon, letting them know that he's got enough food in the caravan to stay there for weeks. And so Higgins finally goes, okay, you win. How much do you need to open this door? He says, Mr. Higgins, you're a real gent. I knew you'd see sense in the end. I need £250 and I do take checks. So Higgins gets his checkbook out and signs it.
That is a very suitable finish
to the whole thing.
It's a win-win.
And he doesn't cancel the check because he kind of admires the pig-headedness of the Irish guy.
He stuck it out.
Then there's another one in Dublin and there's a business and an Irish guy called Warren Lasher and he's super rich. And he's organised the tournament because these guys are rock stars. He's very keen to be friends with Jimmy and win Jimmy over when Jimmy rocks up. So he says, I've booked you into the Gresham Hotel. It's one of Ireland's best, which it is. And he says, I've booked you into the Elizabeth Taylor Suite. You'll enjoy it. And it's this amazing one. It's got its own bar, three bedrooms, a massive bathroom and its own butler.
Pardon me, Your Majesty.
So Jimmy's like going, this is amazing.
Yeah.
Warren says, the businessman says, what's your favourite champagne, Jimmy? And he says, Dom Perignon, I suppose. And he says, okay. And he rings down a reception. Yes, yes, I'd like 25 bottles of Dom Perignon to Mr. White's room every day.
At cost.
Every day, 24
every
bottles
day.
Every day. So they tell us there's no problem. Alex Higgins shows up the next day at the hotel and says, I'd like to check into my usual suite. And they say, sorry, Mr. Higgins, Mr. White's already booked into that. And Higgins is like, I'm the world champion. How is Jimmy White? Is this young guy still
in trouble?
So he says, that's no trouble. I'll just stay in his bathroom. Now, you just get a feeling that hanging out with Alex Higgins and Jimmy White would be one of the best nights of your life, but I think I probably would never recover again. Our next one, though, is general mayhem on a massive scale, but it's not two celebrities. This is an entire sport. It's called the Atherstone Ball Game. Now, it's part of our episode on medieval football. These are games that have almost no rules. Basically, the only rule is you can't kill somebody. Apart from that, it's all pretty, you know, let you go however you want. It's a bit like rugby league. So this is it, the Atherstone Ball Game. There's agreed between two towns, Warwickshire and Leicestershire, that there would be a match of gold, which was basically a sack of gold would be fought over by the men of each village.
Fantastic.
As a bit of a game, right?
And was it an annual event? Was it?
Well, it started off as a one-off. Yeah. So all the men from both towns got together and the gold posts were separated by several miles, like a couple of miles. So these are playing not like on a football field over miles.
Territory between the towns.
Yeah,
I'm guessing.
And so basically you had to carry it to the other town. Right, okay. And that was how you scored. So this is where, like,
how many members was there?
Thousands,
thousands. So pretty much any able-bodied anyone man that could show was allowed up. To play.
So this is like getting over the try line, or scoring a touchdown, and you're getting into the other person's territory.
Yes,
this was literally you had to get into their village and take the sack of gold in this case. But all of them were like,
could
this,
you take their women?
I'm sure there was a lot of
thing at the time that was quite popular. I don't think your town. Take
let's
your
be
women.
Honest, the Me Too movement was still. It's still a millennial.
It's quite millennial strong way. As it is today.
No, not quite that. So there are no referees, and the nature of the match was just brutal. So they played for hours. There was kicking, fighting, punching, gouging, and eventually the Warwickshire lads, they won.
And just so we're clear, so this is carrying as well as kicking the ball.
Anything you could
throwing
do.
Throwing the ball.
Right. Anything, anything to move the ball forward, right? In that time, it's been played every year since. It carried on through the Black Death, two World Wars.
Oh, you got to keep playing.
It just
even
kept playing,
Black Death. Get up, you loser. I've got the plague. Oh, he's bugging it on. The first dive. There's a guy claiming to have the plague.
Yeah, exactly. Guess which one is the first time, 1 year since 1199.
They didn't play it? COVID.
They played through the Black Death, but they stopped for COVID. Like, can you believe it? I mean, if that just tells you how far we've come. So this game has always been played and nothing stopped it. In 1901, an attempt by police and local authorities, they tried to ban it and there was a vote put to the town council who overwhelmingly rejected the ban. They said, get stuffed. Yeah. You got to remember, everywhere else in England, it's pretty much become banned, right?
Yeah.
This game. There used to be a prison workhouse on Long Street, the main street in this town. Mm. When it was there, they used to kick the ball during the game over all of the inmates to let them join in on the fun.
Oh, see, that's inclusive.
Talk about bringing the community together.
I love it.
During the Second World War, the ball was filled with tobacco and sent to the troops in France from the village and North Africa to, like, give them.
Fantastic.
It first got covered on BBC Radio 934 and footage of it was shown on television in 1958. In the 70s, the game was played all over the town.
Yeah.
So the idea was, we'll get to the rules a bit, but basically you've got to hold on to the ball and whoever's holding the ball at the end of the time wins.
Okay.
So it's this huge rolling mall of bodies.
That's interesting. So there's no geographical
no goals or anything
conquest.
With this one. Yeah. And you've got to do anything to hold on to the ball, right? Now what happens is they say in the 70s, one particular one got a bit out of hand, which they don't really go into details with. And the ball used to end up in the Coventry Canal regularly, so they couldn't actually get the ball. I think it's like when a ball gets hit over the fence, you go, oh, you've got to stop playing.
Six it out.
So they made it so it's only on Long Street, right, which is this main street of this thing. In 1986, a public meeting was held to determine the game's future as the violence was extreme. They decided to form a ball game committee that now runs it all, and they now have people who are stewards who mix with the crowd. They're in high-vis jackets and they sort of try and keep an eye. But to say that they're hands-off would be an understatement, right? But in 2020, one of the major times where something went really awry, a steward had a stunning total of 5 cardiac arrests at one particular match. And made it through. He survived.
They play on.
They don't stop for anything, right?
That's what I'm talking about.
2001, it almost stopped because there's an outbreak of foot and mouth disease. But they decided to go ahead. And at that point, they were the only one being played these Shrovetide matches in the country because Ashbourne, which we'll get to next, it had been cancelled. So a lot of things. In the 2019 game, so much violence broke out that the chairman, Rob Bernard, suggested that they were threatening the game's future.
Yeah.
In the past, when things got out of hand, we put it out there that the future of the ball game is under threat and it calms down a bit the following year, but then it comes back again. It's the nature of it. They're fairly casual about it.
Yeah.
Now, the game is There is a specially made leather ball, which has red, white, and blue ribbons tied into the stitching.
Yeah.
It's almost double a basketball, right. And it's filled with water at the beginning of the game. So it's not filled with air.
That's pretty heavy.
It's heavy.
Yeah.
Right? Now, one of the rules is the ball may legitimately be deflated or hidden after 4:30 on the day it's played.
You can pop the ball.
Yeah, basically. The water pours out of it over time anyway, right? The rules are it's a two-hour game. It's played in the town's main street. So 2 hours this goes for. It's got few rules. It's got two main rules. The first one is it's restricted to Long Street.
Yeah.
The second rule is you're not allowed to kill anyone.
Fair enough.
That's it.
That seems harsh, but all right.
They're the rules. So it is just this rolling maul of bodies and
beyond that,
fists and kicking and gouging. Fantastic. And you can do anything.
God,
right?
I'd love to see that.
The videos online are amazing.
Can you go to that?
Yeah, you can show up, and they're not particularly welcoming of people from to play.
I'm happy not to play.
They're quite happy.
I'm happy to come off the bench.
The winner's declared at 5 p.m. with whoever is holding the ball when the whistle sounds. So they try and keep groups of men.
How do they break them into teams again, though? They're all from the one town.
They're all from the one town. No, you just set up your own group of – like what happens is the tactics of – because there's no rules apart from not killing anyone – is the tactics vary. Some people just go in it themselves, but most of them form little groups of mates, so 10 mates.
You can lone wolf
together.
It.
Yeah, you can, but mainly what happens is like someone will hold the ball and then the other mates will stand around them and try and defend them, right? The organisers say they strongly advise that alcohol substance consumption is not recommended.
Yeah.
And they say they'll remove anyone who's drunk too much. I imagine there's a bit of drinking before they start this. If you just,
it's not a safe place to be sober, to be honest.
No,
I mean,
the way they fight, you don't want to be too drunk either. Yeah. Like I think it's like we talked about stand-up comedy. You want there's a happy medium. Ahead of the game itself, all the shops on Long Street are boarded up.
Of course they are.
All the windows, they're all like a hurricane. You know those scenes from America when the hurricane's coming?
Yeah.
It looks like it's exactly like that. Local children are allowed to leave school early on the day to come watch. So school's closed.
Is there panic buying?
The only places they're open are the pubs.
That'd be a safe haven. Yeah.
That's the only place.
They're going to need somewhere to go afterwards.
Yeah, exactly. And they do go afterwards. Ahead of the game, sweets and pennies are thrown to the local children.
Oh, that's lovely.
This is all the tradition going back ages. The ribbons on the ball, they get pulled off as the game is played, and if you capture one, you get a prize as well.
So you don't have to focus on the ball. You can focus on the ribbons.
Some people get that. There's also a special golden penny thrown into the crowd as well that people
It's get. All happening.
So the game starts at 3 p.m. and usually a celebrity guest in the area. It's not like one that we would necessarily always know, but sometimes it's someone might. But
Rolf Harris.
Rolf Harris, Jimmy Savile, all the greats.
So a local celebrity, what, like
well, they had one,
the Butcher. The
one
the butcher
they had this it. Year, they had the guy who cancelled it for COVID. They got him.
Get out alive?
So he got in it. And what happens is they all gather in the street and someone throws it from the upstairs balcony of the Atherston Conservative Club, which is known locally as the Connie. So it's thrown out of the sort of the second floor window into the crowd and it starts. Gameplay, it says, can be quite intense as they compete and often clothes are torn off. There's violence. The New Zealand Herald once went, they described it as combining all the best aspects of the UFC, volleyball, and Gloucester's famous cheese wheel chase.
Oh, of course.
So it's all going back to that. Now, apparently what happens is around 3 p.m. when the ball is let into the crowd, and because it goes for 2 hours, the first hour is people just kicking the ball around to each other. People get photos with it. It's the kids can even come in and touch the ball. It's pretty light on.
Yeah.
Then it says at 4 p.m. the groups move in.
You've had your fun.
So this is like, okay, there's an hour to go. Now we're civilians, get out of here. And that's where they all get in there and decide to really try and get the ball. And hold on to it. And usually it's one holding on, often cowering on the ground while 10 blokes stand around and trying to punch everyone. They try and get into an alley or they try and get into a shop front, like, you know, where the door is, there's a bit of a thing, and there's a vision of this, of them just, it's basically just an all-in brawl.
Trying to stave off
people getting it. And then if someone gets it, there's, you know, and there's just steam coming off everyone, and it is just
incredible.
People getting knocked over. People keep rotating in and out too, because you can't stay in this for long.
Yeah.
It's pretty exhausting, right? Now, this is a police interview that was done about a year ago. It's policed by officers and members of the West Midlands Ambulance Service. They've got a busy day.
That's a busy day for them.
Sergeant Neil Purcell, he said that he's been involved with policing it for nearly two decades.
Yep.
And he stressed that there is an acceptance of a level of violence is involved, right? Because he's a local, he's all for it.
Yeah.
He says, look, we accept the level of violence is in this more than normal. He said, I've policed the ball game on and off for nearly 20 years, and due to its nature and traditional values, there will always be a level of violence involved. The people who take part, spectate, and the actual players are all aware of this. However, if any violence does take place, it will be highlighted to the town council for review. So basically okay. The police go, we'll point it out to the town council.
It's up to you.
It's up to you, we've right?
Done our
you
bit. Can,
he says, the ball game is unique, has been part of the Atherton culture and tradition for over 800 years, and it's organised for the local community. And then he said, and this was after the game when he gave this interview, so he's talked about how important it is, and yep. He says, it's organised by the town council and local community for the local community.
Yep.
This is his next quote. The report of someone's ear being ripped off has not been reported, and no police officer or paramedic at the ball game was made aware of this injury.
I'm sure the
so it really escalates. At the
ear
the
will become
there.
A prize, like the ribbons.
Yeah, that's
right.
Someone
turned up in the ear. I got the ear.
Now, the chief ball game marshal, he gave an interview as well. His name is Noel Johnson, and he says this event is incredibly important. Right?
Yeah.
He said it's our Christmas day. Everyone looks forward to it. It takes a lot of hard work to get the ball game on each year, and it wouldn't happen without the marshals who rely on year in year out, as well as the sponsors. And he points out it's for charity, so lots of money's raised around this, right? The
yes.
ball goes and visits all these. He says, in weeks leading up, the ball goes on tour to schools, sporting clubs, all sorts of places. We know some scores will be settled during it.
From what, previous years? Or
yeah, he said, from, and just I think like stuff.
If stuff you, outside of the game.
If you want to settle a score, he says, we're aware that let's that happened, it. Right? Like this is where the police are not exactly. It's the one day.
It's like that. What do they call that night where you're allowed to kill anyone?
Oh, the purge. It's a bit
it's like the purge.
Let's you settle all our
whatever's
differences.
Happened during the year, you can settle it in this 2-hour window.
Would you like a night like that? Gee, you'd be busy. Mate, you'd be busier than the Santa Claus.
I'd need a lie down after that.
It's a lot of it's a long
been going
list.
Bonkers.
So he says that, and he says some of the things that have happened this year weren't on. He said in one bit. It was out of order and they've been spoken to.
I love that there's a line drawn. So there is rules even though there's no rules.
There's
no rules means you still don't be no triple homicides.
Yeah, no killing anyone. And I think they're a bit like it's all right to punch on when you're going for the ball and everything.
But don't just
settle it up with Bob from the butchers. Cause
no
you just,
sniping
cause
200 metres off the ball.
Yeah, because you think he looked at your wife the wrong way. It's a tiny village, right? There's going to be some scores, right? Yeah, I love what he says. That some of the things that happened this year weren't on. It's okay. Very ominous. He said, these things have happened for years. When I was a young lad, it was far worse, but there wasn't mobile phones or Facebook to capture it all. We keep coming back to those bloody
ruining
mobile
everything.
Phones. He says, all the people see is a few minutes where it kicked off in the other side of the ball game. They don't see it all coming together. He said, everyone shares in the history of the event and it all gets forgotten afterwards, right?
Fantastic.
The 2023 game in February this year was quite interesting because on social media, and you might have even seen this, some of the people listening now, there was a guy in orange sort of high-vis pants and him and his mates, one of his mates had the ball and him and a group of them had gotten to the doorway of a William Hill betting shop and it was in the dying like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's just footage of him and his mates just roundhouse punching and kicking because he's been lifted up above the crowd
yeah. And
he's just kicking people as hard as he can. And it's just a full brawl. Like, and this went viral and everyone said, this is awful, right? So they tracked down who it is and the guy was a guy called, and they won these guys, who's called Reese Johnson. He's a 23-year-old labourer and he's from that town. And because he had these distinctive trousers. He's the bit the social media went everywhere.
Like a death row jumpsuit, it sounds like to me.
Well, all the media show up, international media, because it went viral, to go try and stir up, like, wasn't this guy a thug, outrageous? And the town goes, no, he's the most valuable player that year. They just like, they call him a hero. He was like
a hand of God goal.
Yeah, they were like, he was one of the best players.
The hand of God kicked to the face.
Yeah, they were trying to get people stirred up and angry about it. That was the opposite. Everyone's going, what are you talking about? That's the game, right? Everyone he kicked outplayed. Knew this was the game, right? And they were doing it too. His parents said they were incredibly proud of his competitive performance. What they managed to do is get the ball and they fought people off. The whole time, they were, two of his mates were underneath clinging to the ball for 20 minutes as this went on.
They deserve high praise too. Yeah.
He said that they were all locals. It was mainly them against a group of farmers from nearby Grendon Village that they were fighting off. So they all know each other, right? Yeah. It's not like, you know.
Those farmers would have been hard at it too. They
That's the. This is the thing, right? Paddock. His mum, Katie, said he was part of the wedding team along with his two brothers, so he thoroughly enjoyed it. Everyone knows what it's like. This is the media trying to stir up the trouble. His dad is Noel Johnson, who is the guy, the chief marshal.
Yes.
So he was very proud of his son for doing this. He won the game back in 1995. He says it's just a bit of fun. That's all he said.
It's a bit harmless fun.
Now, one of the things that also emerged from this year's game is there was a photograph of a guy with an enormous swollen black eye. It turns out that this was a guy called Danny Riley, who's described as the Lionel Messi of the Grendon Village team.
He's the guy.
Yeah. So he's known as like one of the best players.
Yeah.
What it says, one analyst said, said that he was held down and beaten. To stop him early on, they came and took him out.
They took him out.
Yeah, within minutes of the start to stop his participation, right? But because he was not killed, play continued, right? The Chief Marshal Johnson, who's, remember, his son won this competition on the other side.
Yeah.
This just shows you, he said, I saw Daddy's injury and took him to first aid. This is this huge black eye. I don't know how it happened. He could have fallen over or hit it on a lamppost.
Could have happened before the game started.
You don't know.
You just don't know.
Could be an eye infection. So hard to know how the giant
self-inflicted. I don't know.
Just careless. Got to look where he's walking. Local woman Jill, who was drinking in the pub after the game, was asked about it, and she said, I know one man who had to have his nose straightened out in the con club afterwards, but there were no serious injuries. People love it. The men go mad. The shirts all get ripped off. It is great for us ladies to see some nice fit lads.
Now, there it is. Everyone's having a great day. Keep your nose out of it, everybody.
She said, they're all friends afterwards until next year and it'll all start again. It's a proper sport.
Oh, I love it. We're going.
So that's Atherton.
Yeah.
Our next one is Ashbourne, which is called the Ashbourne Royal Shrovetide Football is the official name. It's got 9,000 people live in this town and it's in the Midlands. It is also a medieval football game, but it's slightly different. It's played on Shrove Tuesday and Ash Wednesday. So it goes over 2 days. Okay. There's a break in between it, but for 2 8-hour halves.
Sort of break where you over to like, do, clean up your dead.
Exactly. Go and get bury the dead.
Bury the dead, go get the injured.
It's known locally as Hug Ball, and it's been played since at least 1667, although the exact origins of the games are unknown due to a fire at the Royal Shrovetide Committee office in the 1890s, which destroyed all the records.
Right.
Yeah. Whenever records get destroyed in a fire, I always think, what did they say?
I think of Mar-a-Lago.
So they have a roll of honour that goes back to 1891 after that fire that they kept, which shows who wins each week. It's been shut a few times. 1968 and 2001, it was cancelled because of outbreaks of foot and mouth disease.
Yep.
Because these are very rural areas. And in 2021, it was also stopped for COVID. But during the World Wars, the game was played, including the Ashbourne Regiment even played a version of the pitch in the German trenches during the First World War.
As if they didn't have their hands full already. Well, let's take a break from this fighting. With some more fighting. Yeah. Let's fight each other.
Yeah, let's blow off some steam.
Jesus.
Right?
Wow.
Now, Mick and I have actually said we're going to go to the Atherston ball game. Not to play. We're not idiots, but we're going to hold ourselves into a pub and watch it up close because that looks absolutely amazing. This is true mayhem. Carlos Kayser. Now, if you didn't listen to this episode, just to give some context, Carlos Kayser is a guy who played football, and I use that in air quotes, even though you can't see me, in Brazil for a good 20-plus years, except he never actually got onto the pitch. He always found a way to be injured, but still got paid and got all the fame and all the money and all the women and all the cars that went with the fame of a footballer in Brazil, yet he always came up with an excuse of why he couldn't get onto the pitch. Now, amazingly, at one point, he gets recruited to this club and he finds out very early on that this new owner is going to be trouble for him because this new owner is one of the top criminals in Brazil. Can Carlos pull it off and stay at this club but not play at all? Bangu, which is a small club in the western zone of Rio, it's owned by a guy called Castor de Andrade. Now, you might know Castor from when we did our FIFA stories.
Yes.
Remember Havelange, the FIFA president that came before Sepp Blatter, was friends with a gangster.
Yes.
That was Castor.
Right.
Castor is great mates with FIFA president. He's bribed every policeman in Brazil.
Sure.
He's bribed the president. And this all comes out later.
Yes.
Literally got the president in his pocket, the police chiefs, everyone, right?
Yeah.
Now, he's a very dangerous man as well. He once chased a referee around the pitch with a gun flapping in his back pocket, arguing with him. Now, he owns Bangu and he is a full-on owner, right?
Yeah.
Marco Antonio, who's played 52 times for Brazil, part of the 1970 World Cup winning squad for Brazil, absolute legend. He ends up at Bangu, but when he's on the decline of his career the last few years. One time he is injured, and this is the team you're going to remember Kaiser's about to join.
Yeah.
He said he was injured, and Castor after a while decides that this guy, Marco Antonio, is not really injured and comes up to him and says, you need to play. And he says, I just don't think I'm ready. So Castor whips out a handgun and starts shooting in the directions of his feet, which saw Antonio jump 2 feet in the air and then run around like Carl Lewis. And Castor says, see, you're fine. You can play the next game. And he played the next game.
Okay. So Kayser should not be going to this team.
Kayser is joining
any other team, but not this team.
Now, Castor has made his money. He's known for being associated with hundreds of murders.
Okay.
So not just shooting at footballers, right? He would organise them. One time he was being interviewed by a TV presenter, and they're chatting, and he sort of suggests about allegations that he's been involved in murders. And Castor on TV leans over and says, get this in your head, only people that deserve it get killed.
Let's go to a break.
Exactly. He's seen as the most dangerous man in Britain. He got his wealth, Castor, who owns this, through Jogo de Bicho, which is the animal game. It's an illegal bingo lottery started in 1892 when the local zoo was struggling to make ends meet.
How's it work?
They spin, unlike Tatslotto or something where the numbers come up, they spin it and different animals come up. Yeah. So it might be like a monkey, a hippo or whatever, right?
If you're on the winning animal.
And if you've got the right animals. And this becomes, and you got to remember in Brazil there's like, you know, poor education. So this is a really simple game for people to play. It becomes huge. It's got 25 animals you've got to get, right? So big that Rudyard Kipling, on a trip to Rio in 1933, was captivated by the game. He said it's on every street corner. It's made illegal in 1946, but it's so popular it just gets run by people like Castor.
Of course it is.
And it's popular everywhere. So this is like a license to print money. But because they're all gangsters and they've got so much money, one way they stop the government and police getting onto them is they all buy the top football clubs because it is so much harder for the police to challenge someone who saved the local football club. With millions of supporters. It's a bit like when
Pablo Escobar did this as well.
Yeah, and Abramovich at Chelsea, one of the reasons he did that was so he was so high profile.
Yeah.
So that's how Castor ends up with this. But Castor runs this club with an iron fist. On one occasion, two players show up. One of them, again, was Marco Antonio, who's the one he shot at.
Yes.
They trade up late for training, so Castor made them train the entire time naked, not even with shin pads. Kaiser meets Kestel one day.
Yeah.
And he wants to go and play at Bangu. And so he's saying they meet each other.
I've got an uneasy feeling about this.
So Kaiser is discussing with him a short-term contract. It's in early 1985. And while they're chatting at the bar, two women approach them and seduce the two men. And they both go back with a woman each to their separate hotel rooms.
Right.
And Kestel says, this is amazing. Like, these two women are, and he's suspicious that Kaiser's set it up. And he says, are you sure you didn't set this up? And Kaiser's like, no, they're just attracted to you because you're an incredibly good-looking old man. Kestel's kind of still suspicious, but he decides, I like Kaiser, and they form a relationship where neither ask each other too many questions about how things happen. But he suddenly goes, I like this man a lot.
Okay.
So he gives him a contract, right? And Kaiser becomes the only person who can speak his mind to Kestel. And no one can understand. He starts treating Kaiser like a son. And at Bangu, he becomes a legend. One of the players, Ado, says he didn't play one game and he made history at the club. He became as important as any of the greats players for doing nothing. He never played. I don't think I ever saw him in football boots. I don't even know what shoe size he is. And Kestel kept giving him contracts. Where others tiptoed like around him, Kaiser would just go in and just hang out in Kestel's office, which was a no-go zone. It was next door to the locker room, but sure, still the players never went in. The players would be getting ready for training and all they could hear was Kestel and Kaiser just laughing their heads off in his office, right? Now, you got to remember, a journalist, Renato Prado, said that in those days, Bangu was a complete madhouse. The coach, Moises, he was beaten up by a director of the club in a row over the theft of a Playboy magazine.
There's been an incident at the club.
Can you imagine a board member beating up the coach of any club in any sport over the theft of a Playboy magazine? It's just the best. That's, it's so Brazilian.
So Brazilian.
It's just the best. While he's at the club, he's injured, obviously.
Is he?
Yeah, you'd be surprised. He hasn't played a game for their minor yet.
He got a letter from his dentist?
Well, he becomes the unofficial press officer.
Does he?
Because there's not press officers.
And writes the first article about himself.
Well, that's the thing. He starts, Kestel thinks he's great with the gift of the gab. You handle all the media.
Right.
So he becomes more known as the face of the club than some of the players, even though he never plays. He's always in full kit when he's doing an interview. Kaiser, though, also is still doing all the favours to the players, right? Because he knows the way to stay is ingratiate himself. And he's going out to nightclubs every night, picking up women, having a ball. He's living the superstar lifestyle of a top footballer without playing. And he's keeping them all happy. Now, the team have been very unhappy that training in the heat of the day. It's often 40 degrees in where they're training. And no one dares to approach Kestel about it. But Kaiser, he's now got to the point, he's about, you know, a year in. He's at the running stage of his rehabilitation.
Okay, he's making progress.
Yeah. The thing about Kaiser is, incredibly fit. We'll often do all the training when it comes to fitness training, and we'll do better than most. Minute the ball comes out, he disappears. Nah. No one knows where he is. He had just been simply refusing to train in the heat, and the players all complain to him. So he goes to Kestel and says, look, I don't know about training this heat. He says, when I was playing professionally in Arabia, it was so hot we trained in the evening and it was just better for the players. Why risk your players? Sense. And Kestel goes, oh, yeah, that's a good point. Kaiser says later on, I'd never been to Arabia. I'd seen a film about it. Right? Problem is, though, as this goes on, you know, he's been there a year. Kestel loves him. And the more Kestel loves him, while it's keeping him at the club, the more Kestel wants to see him play. He's like, you're such a good player. Why aren't we seeing you play?
This is the problem with a lie. It's like saying you've won Lotto.
Yeah.
And eventually people are going to want to see you splash the cash.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like there's got to be
someone gets
day.
Sick. They say, can you help pay the bills? And you're like, didn't you win Ted's Lotto?
A doomsday cult. Once you name the date, you kind of
never
committed.
Name a date.
So his problem is at some point, he's got to have to come good on his promise.
The rubber's got to hit the road, doesn't it? So Kaiser, it's 4 a.m. and he's out partying at a nightclub.
Usually, shouldn't they be training?
Usually they get to the nightclub at 1 a.m. in Brazil, right?
Yeah.
It's 4 a.m. He's been partying and dancing all night. The coach comes in to the nightclub and goes, Kaiser says you have to play today. And he says, I've been out all night and I'm still not over my injury. And he says, you're going to have to play, but I reckon I can just put you on the bench and then we'll just find a way not to sub you in.
Everyone's
by this point, more and more people are kind of getting in on this, right? But they like him so much that they're like, and he's doing, everyone owes him about 10 favours.
Yeah, yeah.
His black book has thousands of women in it, thousands of nightclub owners in it. Like, if he has the keys to the city in terms of nightlife, and you have a problem, Kaiser will fix it for you. So no one wants him to go, right? They're all going, oh, what are we going to do? Anyway, he shows up at the ground. He's massively exhausted. He's had no sleep. He's on the bench. The team quickly go 2-0 down 15 minutes in. So Castor in the stands is furious at this performance. He's got a walkie-talkie to talk directly to the coach.
Jesus.
He gets on and goes, put the big man on, stick him up front so that he scores. He says, the coach, Moses, who's been beaten up by director for
bashed with a playboy.
Says, oh, Kaiser's still struggling with injury a bit. Kaiser says, you'll be struggling with injury in a bit if you don't put him on. The coach goes to Kaiser, he wants you on. Kaiser's like, we agreed I wasn't going to play. And he goes, mate, I can't stop
my
it
hands
now.
Are tired.
You got to do it. So Kaiser starts to warm up, knowing everything's about to go very badly for him. And he's like warming up on the sidelines and he's like sweating. He says he was just sure this was like the end of the line.
The end of it.
The crowd are all getting stuck into him a bit. Suddenly, Kaiser is in the stands fighting with the fans. And the team and everyone piles in after him to like calm things down. And Kaiser is given a red card, even though he hasn't got on the field yet.
Genius.
Right? So he goes to the locker room. The game finishes. They've lost. It's very deathly quiet in the locker room. And Castor walks in. No one's talking. No one's looking at him. And he comes and stands in front of Kaiser. And on each side, he's got two heavies, big blokes, big gangsters. Kaiser looks up at him and says, Doctor, which is an honorary title they all give him, please allow me to say something. Castor's looking at him. Kaiser says, God took both my parents away when I was 13 years old, but he gave me another father, you. When those bastard fans accused you of being a crook, I lost it and went for them. I should have taken all of them out. I know I let the club down, but I would do it again. Don't worry, my contract is up in a week and I'll be off. And Castor looks at him and leans in and goes, whispers, you're a good boy, Kaiser. And then he starts laughing out loud and goes, Joel, to his offsider, put another 6 months on Kaiser's contract and double his pay. We need people like this at the club.
It's just fantastic. This is awesome.
So he realizes at this point it's probably time up.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, like, well, he's got away with it this time.
Yeah.
So he knows a player who's playing for a Corsican club. So Corsica, the island that Napoleon's from, off the coast of France, finds out one of the Brazilian players that he knows is playing over there. It's a place called Ozical. And he meets this player. The player's name is Fabinho. He's playing over there. He comes back one day and his brother Marco is staying in his apartment and he's brought a friend along, Kaiser, who's staying with him.
Yeah.
He meets Kaiser and he loves Kaiser so much. He's on the French League's winter break. It's Division 2 in the French League. He starts hanging out with Kaiser. The club starts saying back in Corsica, have you got any other good Brazilians you could bring over? He decides he likes Kaiser so much as a friend, doesn't think he can probably play that well, but he's got a good CV, says, you should get this guy. It's like the second coming, right? They sign him. So suddenly he's signed to a Corsican club. He arrives on the first day and he's talked himself up in the local press and everything. So they think they're getting Pelé.
I just hope he doesn't get injured. Really do. Not early anyway.
So he shows up and there's a huge crowd to greet him. You can't believe it. He starts playing to the crowd as he always does. He says to one of the people who's with him, can you get me some flowers? Not a cemetery nearby. They manage to find some flowers and he runs up and gives them to the president's wife in front of everyone. He's just a showman.
Yeah.
Then to his horror, they produce a bag full of balls, soccer balls, and say, how about you show us some tricks? He instead starts throwing the balls into the crowd going, souvenirs for everyone. And realizes if I get rid of all the balls, there'll be no training today. So that's what he does, right? Yes, Kaiser, what an absolute legend. I don't know how he did that, but he managed to get away. He stayed there a little bit longer, left on very good terms before he had to go off and not play for another club. So his just ability to get out of any situation, if you haven't listened to that episode, it's one of the greatest things of all time. Remind you all of Bizarre Plus. As a member, you get a weekly bonus podcast. You get access to all the past bonus episodes. Get behind-the-scenes access. We have a fortnightly newsletter. We have access to a members-only chat room. We often vote on future episodes, and people send in suggestions all the time. And I often upload a lot of photos from each of the episodes we do. You also get early access to any live show tickets, which we are currently planning on at the moment. So becoming a member is a great way to get more Sports Bazaar content. We are rapidly coming close to being back for the year. We can't wait to get some new stories out to you in 2024.